up, everybody? Peyton Westner here, and welcome back to Watching with Westner. The first episode of this summer, the weather is now beautiful, as opposed to March when it was a little bit cold and changing from spring into summer. I appreciate you joining us today, this Monday afternoon, and I have a fantastic guest. John Walker III of Missouri City, Texas, joins us. He is the 2016-17 TABC 5A Player of the Year. He had a fantastic senior season. He currently has offers from Arizona State, Duquesne, and Houston. So without further ado, let's get to him. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Sam. Just out here getting it in and grinding as usual.
Yeah, and speaking of the grind, how's it gone of late?
Oh, man, it's been good, man. Been blessed, honestly.
John, just to start off and let the audience know a little bit about you, I have a segment called Shot Clock, 30 seconds and just rapid-fire questions, just for them to get a little better gauge of the personal side of you. Does that sound good to you?
All right. All right. I'm ready for it.
All right. So let's start off. Favorite restaurant?
Cheddar's.
Favorite player in the NBA?
LeBron James.
Favorite city?
Houston.
Okay, what's the best thing to do in Houston?
Probably go downtown.
Go downtown? What's there to do downtown?
They got a lot of museum districts there. Fun activities. There's always something popping downtown.
What is your favorite off-the-court hobbies?
Probably designing clothes.
Designing clothes?
Yes, sir.
Very, very cool. You don't hear that too often. What do you just, you know, is it suits? Kind of like what we've seen, the great fashion you have during prom, or?
No, it's more urban wear type. Okay. I haven't really gotten to the suit thing. I hope to one day, but just urban wear, I feel it all. I don't like it.
And then finally, what is your favorite pump up track before a game?
Little Wayne. Right above.
Okay, very nice. John, I couldn't help but notice on your Twitter you have seen Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and you cried. I mean, it's a very emotional movie. You're not the only one. I teared up. I would say the second one got me more tears to cry than the first. Just explain your take of Guardians of the Galaxy, because I thought it was a pretty great movie.
The first one was Marvel movie ever, so I just heard the second one coming out 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I gotta see it. It lived up to my potential. And I don't know, man. That's just my favorite thing. I just love that.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite part of the movie?
Probably him defeating his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of wanted to work out, but at the same time, I was like, yeah.
I think you saw the article where I believe it was Esquire that said the movie would have been better without Baby Groot. What do you think of that? Because I definitely disagree.
Oh man, that's completely trash. I mean, without Baby Groot, that's probably my favorite character in the movie. He's just, I don't know, he's just too adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And Wyatt, when Yondu cried, that was actually when I got a little teary-eyed. One of our viewers, Wyatt Wheeler, he said his favorite part was when Yondu died and just the whole emotional father-son relationship he had with Chris Pratt's character, Star-Lord. But I completely agree. The first one was great. The second one definitely lived up to it. And I think we both agree it's probably because of Baby Groot.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
So transitioning to basketball. You had a terrific season this senior year. It seemed like you really improved in multiple facets of your game, added more to your game, more of a skill, just improved the skills that you built on to last year. Now with this said and done, how do you feel about your senior season? What do you feel like you accomplished? Because you accomplished a lot.
Oh, yeah. I think my senior campaign was
kind of
like the best I've experiencing going to state with my brothers and being able to do it my last year to go out like that was unbelievable. So, I mean, and also, really, my game, I think it did. I mean, playing AU with Texas Pro also lifted it up. So, being able to showcase what I learned with Texas Pro Marshall team is just a blessing, and they at a high level is a plus.
So with AAU, did you feel like the AAU circuit really improved your skill just playing against that high-level competition?
Oh, yeah, most definitely, because that was the first time I had any playing in the game. I remember the first couple games, like, okay, John, you got to stay in the gym because these guys kind of win it every day. So just being able to compete with those guys and do it at a high level, that was something that boosted my confidence, knowing that I can compete with guys like that. So I knew I'd already seen the best of the best.
Especially after your senior season, you've picked up some outstanding accolades as well as the state run that you mentioned. What do the accolades mean to you? Is it something to motivate you heading into college, or is it just a nice feather in your cap?
I mean, accolades is just, I mean, it's cool because it gives recognition. It just lets you know that you're carrying your hard work and not going unnoticed. But, I mean, with or without, I'm going to work the same. It don't make or break my game. But it definitely is an honor and a blessing to know that people out there acknowledge my hard work that I put into it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, before your senior season or at the cusp of it, you committed to DuQuoin. You had a great visit there, it sounds like. What was so appealing about that visit and what eventually, I guess, made it feel like it was the right place for you to further your collegiate career before decommitting this spring?
Definitely the plan the coaches had laid out for me. I mean, from the strength conditioning coach all the way up to the academic advisor, they all had a plan that focused on me individually and just making sure that I would be okay the next 4 years and just really, really getting into my head that this is the college that would have my best interest at heart. So I think them just showing that they really wanted me to take my game and my studies to the next level really kind of sold me on it.
Now, with Jim Ferry being fired, that's definitely changed your decision. And as it should, a lot of Dukes have transferred since Ferry's firing. What has the new coach done to really approach you and start the recruitment process all over again?
I mean, that's kind of what it was. To this day, I still haven't talked to the new head coach.
Really?
It was kind of weird. I mean, I'm sure, you know, new coach, he got a lot to do. So I didn't reciprocate the love. So it was cool, though. I mean, I haven't been 100%, but that's just how it was on my end.
Their new coach, Keith DeBrant, he was the head coach at Akron. Did you ever, I guess, have any communication with him before you committed and then decommitted from DuQuoin? Have you had any association, not necessarily after he took the DuQuoin job, but before?
No, I've never had any association with him.
Okay. So now you have new offers. What new offers have teams offered you? I guess what new teams have emerged for you since you decommitted? It seems like with the great senior season you have, you've only become a more highly touted prospect.
I mean, two of my Arizona State, of course, offered me Sucker Nets, offered me East Tennessee State, and a lot of the thing was you could move late. Because I was committed out to you, but, you know, they thought I was off the market. So, really right now, there's just strong interest, and people just asking around about me. So, a lot of stories just interested in me, just asking for my game film. But, that's cool.
And the head coach at Arizona State, Bobby Hurley, I'm sure it was a pretty great experience getting to talk to him and pick his mind during the visit, or did you have a chance to connect with him?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you can just sense the greatness when you arrive. Really cool dude. Honestly, kept it 100 the whole time. You can tell he knew what he was doing and what he was talking about when he spoke. But you definitely want to listen.
Now, with a head coach like Bobby Hurley compared to most, he's performed at the highest level. He had an astounding career at Duke, which translated to the NBA with Sacramento Kings. So, does that definitely weigh on your thought process and decision process of where I want to go, considering he has that playing background and has had an astounding college career and made it to the NBA, somewhere you definitely want to go?
Oh, it's definitely an impact. Like, he knows what it takes to get to that level, so I know he would definitely have an idea of how to get there. So, him being in the NBA, he shows me that he knows what it is and what it takes. So, that's definitely a plus.
Now, just to pick your mind a little bit broadly, teams aside, what are some of the big factors that play a role in your decision process? Is it, I mentioned, head coaching? Is it just having a great rounded staff, assistant coaches, trainer? Is it the community and how they will rally around their players in the basketball program? What are some of the things that come to mind when you are weighing your decision?
I think it's really how they have treated their players, how much they put into their players and their program. Is it somewhere where they show love and really, really, really go to bat for their players? And also how they develop players. Like, people come in and all you look up who's coming in at like my size, mm-hmm. how they ended up over 4 years, how that panned out. And did they gain, how much they gained progress? And did they flourish in their system? Just, you know, stuff like that.
And what are some of the players that you've compared yourself to in the system that you could be emerging into next year?
You're talking about in the NBA?
Yeah. With Arizona State, is it kind of James Harden? Or what are some of the players that you've been keeping an eye on of how their careers progressed at these universities you're weighing?
Okay.
Now, with the mid-majors, or let me ask you this, because some websites have contrasting schools in terms of where you've received offers. What are the schools that you are really considering heading down to this stretch where national letter, or the deadline for signing your national letter of intent is Wednesday? What are some of the schools that you are heavily considering right now, if you don't mind me asking?
Southern Miss is definitely, of course, Arizona State. People schools reaching out to me like Western Kentucky and Utah. I mean, who knows what I'm going to offer for the show. That's the thing, that they're just showing interest. Mm-hmm. They're playing out schools like that, I'm sure. I think they're how I'm on this.
So you do have offers from Western Kentucky and Utah?
No. Just interest.
Okay, got it. Sorry, miscommunication on my behalf. I read you did have an in-house visit by South Carolina. What was that like? Did Frank Martin come out?
No, the associate head coach came out. Okay. That was really cool. That was great. Just knowing that they even knew who I was, that was just really awesome. Even having them in the building that day.
So these final days, what are some of where's your mind at right now? Definitely, like you said, what we said off air, these are the final days of school. You have about 12 days left. How are you juggling your studies with this very important decision, one of the most important to your life thus far? And when should we expect a decision from you, John?
It can be stressful at home, but at the same time, I always knew that I was blessed to be in a situation to have options to go with. So I always keep a square head and think I'm blessed just to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And decision-wise, this Wednesday being Saturday, it might be before Saturday, but I don't see it being before Saturday, given that there's still schools out there that I'm considering.
Mm-hmm. And did I have that right? The deadline for Division I is Wednesday, or did I lose that in translation?
To sign a letter of intent is Wednesday, but you don't have to sign a letter of intent.
Okay, so you still have a few weeks, or?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. So finally, and thank you so much for your time, John. For those who have not had the chance to watch you play, how would you describe your game? You're very athletic, and you are very talented with multi-facets. How would you self-describe your game?
Very versatile, kind of a do-it-all player. Go get you 10 blocks, 10 assists, 10 rebounds, score 30 points. Really, whatever the game requires. I was the best player. I was the biggest player. I just try to do whatever the coach asks. Being my skill set, being what it is, I can shoot the three, put it on the floor. So I'm really more of like a hybrid game.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think the great thing that any college coach loves is, like you said, you're willing to fit into any role. And with your versatility, that's definitely suited to fit into any role and exceed and strive to the highest level.
Right. Most coaches do love that. That's what they always mention, versatility.
Well, John, I cannot thank you enough for your time. I really appreciate it, and best of luck with your decision.
No problem at all, sir. Thank you.
And talk to you later.
Sure.
John Walker III, he has a big decision. A very interesting group of schools he has. Arizona State, I have seen somewhere that he has Houston, and he's from Houston. As you can see, that's his favorite city, and the one place he really enjoys spending time. He mentioned the great museums they have downtown, as well as it is his favorite city. That's very surprising for someone who has traveled on the AAU circuit. Interesting. He is with the way college basketball and how most kids have already committed, he is a very critical piece to any part or any team he joins to be recruited and committed to a school this late in the recruiting process. You've seen a lot of the top recruits already declare and commit to a university. Kevin Knox to Kentucky. You saw Jordan Tucker to Duke. John Walker III could make one team very happy and win the lottery. Arizona State, he goes to Bobby Hurley, and the success that program is due to have in the future with having a coach like Hurley at the helm, it'd be interesting. They just had Torian Graham, and he was an outstanding player, a player that I kind of see a little bit of John Walker III in. I really do. So moving on, different as our past episodes, we're going to go into some more topics. Maybe a little MMA, college basketball, of course, baseball, football. We may even go to movies, music, pop culture, as well as amusement parks. I mean, I have family in Orlando. There's nothing better to do than amusement parks. So let's talk a little MMA. UFC 211 was on pay-per-view this Saturday. It was an outstanding card, one that I felt finally lived up to expectations in terms of the cards that they've been putting together. Many of the cards have been lackluster of late. You had Woodley Wonderboy at 209. That was a fight that was highly anticipated, but definitely did not live up to expectations. It basically could have been a tie. I thought it was a tie, that or a 3-2 advantage, 48-47 for Wonderboy. Then you had UFC 210, which had controversy. Not with Cormier, Rumble Johnson, but rather Weidman and Musashi, the co-main event, where Chris had his fingers down, which with the unified MMA rules that have been passed at the beginning of the year, would have been a disqualification for Musashi, but Musashi gets the win because of a weird instant replay situation, which I still do not know if it is legal within New York State. So, this card with Stipe Miocic and Junior Dos Santos and Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Jessica Andrade, I felt it lived up to expectations. It was a very back-and-forth fight with Jędrzejczyk and Andrade. Jędrzejczyk had 40 landed strikes in each round, at least. She really smothered Andrade and ended up beating her by a unanimous decision, which I don't think she lost a round. I believe she didn't lose a round. It was 50-45 twice, and then 50-44. So let's just break down the main card, as well as, I suppose, the undercard prelim. It was Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier, a fight that I was very excited for. Would have brought some clarity to the 155-pound division, but it ends up in a no contest, although it should have been a disqualification, in favor of Dustin Poirier for the victory. Eddie Alvarez ended up throwing two illegal knees. Sure, when you're in the midst of a fight, you really do not know whether your opponent's knees are down. You just think about ending the fight and getting the TKO. But the last blow with Poirier having both knees down, I am of the line of belief that should have been a victory in favor of Poirier TKO. Or I suppose, disqualification. Eddie Alvarez, if they wanted to somehow have a weird decision as Musashi Weidman, they could have went TKO. But to me, it was Poirier by disqualification. Poirier is appealing the decision. It will be interesting to see what comes of that. Weidman's appealing, now Poirier's appealing. Those two decisions, even if they're claimed victories, overturned victories rather, will they have any impact? in the contender, the jousting of contenders, the 185 middleweight division is very, very cloudy right now. Although Dana White did remove George St. Pierre from the title fight with Michael Bisping, and Yoel Romero moves in. Much deserved by Yoel Romero. You still have Robert Whittaker, Gegard Mousasi, Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold has not fought since last June when he lost the belt. There's a lot of questions being asked, if you will, at the 185-pound division. Will there be any answers? We'll have to see. David Branch came in against Jocko. Branch was the World Series of Fighting Champ, two divisions. I believe it was 185 and 205 pounds. He came in, won by split decision. It was probably the worst main card fight of the night. Not in lack of the fighters' efforts, of course, but just the action that occurred. It was very slow paced. Branch jumped on top a little bit, and Jocko, anyone could have won that fight. I will be interested to see where Branch tops out. When you have any new fighter from a division come over, Will Brooks was the latest example that we've seen. It's always interesting to see who they are better as and where they top out at and fit into the top 10 rankings. But a fight that did deliver was Frankie Edgar, Yair Rodriguez. Frankie Edgar put on a show. He smothered Yair Rodriguez. The hype train that was Yair Rodriguez, the last hype train we have seen at the featherweight division was Conor McGregor. Yair Rodriguez, some were saying, or I believe Daniel Cormier said during the broadcast, Yair Rodriguez was a fighter that believed that he would have more popularity at the end of it as Canelo Alvarez. If you're a boxing fan, Canelo Alvarez is an impressive prize fighter, and he has a upcoming bout with Triple G, Gennady Golovkin. But Frankie Edgar, no discredit to him. He went in there, he peppered him with shots, and he took him down and grounded and pounded him. Yair Rodriguez never stood a chance in that fight. Now, with Yair Rodriguez's history, he's never really been tested, so this is a good first test and a loss that I'm sure he will rebound and learn from. But in the later stages of the fight, second round, I couldn't help but think Yair Rodriguez could land a shot that could change this whole demeanor of this fight. He never did. Frankie Edgar ended up getting a great finish. It was by Dr. Stoppage between the second and third round. Frankie Edgar is a fighter that could definitely end up getting another title shot. The winner of Max Holloway, Jose Aldo. Would he win that fight? He's already has two losses to Aldo. I'm sure he may be rooting for Holloway. But even if Aldo wins, who is there to make another title shot? A contender to get a title shot, other than Edgar? Cub Swanson? Definitely. He had a great fight against Artem Lobov on fight night. He didn't finish him, but he dominated it, kind of like Jung Jacek and Andrade. I'm not sure. I would say Frankie Edgar does get the title shot. That or you're going to make a title eliminator with him and Cub Swanson, which would be a good bout. I suppose that would be the game plan if Aldo or the winner gets hurt. But I believe, firmly believe, that if Max Holloway wins, Frankie Edgar, that's the fight to make. It'd be a good fight. Cub Swanson and Max Holloway have already fought. I believe that was Max Holloway's last loss. So that may be an interesting storyline that UFC can play on if they decide to go down either of those paths. Then Damian Maia and Jorge Masvidal. Damian Maia finally gets his title shot. Much deserved. And I would have been disappointed to see Jorge Masvidal win that fight. Not because I'm a hater of Masvidal, but just because of the way Damian Maia has earned this title shot. He has had a fabulous career, and he has a 7-fight win streak. 7 fights. Most by submission. Some were by decision, of course. But the way Masvidal has been on his streak, beating Cowboy Cerrone was a very impressive win. You really could have made the case that this was a title eliminator regardless. Wonderboy wasn't going to get another title shot if Masvidal would have won. Robbie Lawler's already scheduled with a fight with Cowboy Cerrone, which I am very excited about moving forward. Damian Maia, it was a split decision, of course, but I thought Maia had enough just control. He controlled the terrain of the fight. He jumped on the back of Jorge Masvidal, and The debate that was going, that I've heard, is did he do enough physical damage to Masvidal to warrant rounds being awarded to him? He controlled the fight. I kind of take that as octagon control, but on the ground. Jorge Masvidal did land some nasty hits, one that opened up a cut underneath Maia's eye early on, but he stayed persistent, he weathered the storm, and Maia, anytime he gets the back of someone, or is coming close to a Kimura, or a triangle choke, or a rear naked choke even, it's exciting action, and I am looking forward to his fight with Woodley. Woodley is a college wrestler. He has turned into more of a brawler, stand-up fighter as of late. What will Woodley decide to do? Will he try to stand up and keep the fight away from the ground, or will he try to ground and pound him on the ground? Woodley definitely has the athleticism advantage with this upcoming fight with Damian Maia. If it holds true, I would assume it does, unless George St. Pierre decides to screw up another division with getting another title shot. Damian Maia, you cannot count him out. The thing people forget is he was at 185 pounds. The non-MMA purists like myself forget that he was at 185 pounds. He made a run. He beat Chael Sonnen, and he ended up losing to Anderson Silva in a unanimous decision for Silva, 5 rounds. That's impressive that he stayed. He weathered the storm and did not get KO'd by Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva that has fallen off a cliff with the 2 losses to Weidman and then losses to Cormier on short notice. I'm not sure if we count that. The Nick Diaz no contest because of failed drug tests for Silva, marijuana for Diaz. But that was a Silva that was in his prime, and that was literally crushing opponents. Jędrzejczyk and Andrade. Let's just say this. Who is going to get the next shot with Jędrzejczyk? Now, if Jędrzejczyk wins her next fight, that would tie her with the most title defenses by any woman MMA fighter, Ronda Rousey, 6 title defenses. I personally am of the belief that Joanna Jędrzejczyk is the best women's MMA fighter of all time. Now, I know that it's easy to say that with her, just her pedigree, her amateur career, boxing, and the fact that she has dominated of late. But let me say this. Joanna Jędrzejczyk has weathered storms. I keep on coming back to that term because I see that showing us a lot about a fighter and how they overcome adversity in the midst of a fight, making adjustments. Claudia Gadelha last year, it was in July, it was the Ultimate Fighter Ultimate Fighter finale. She lost the first 2 rounds to Claudia Gadelha. She could have wilted. All Gadelha had to do was win one more round. She did gas, but that is a testament to Jędrzejczyk's endurance. She can go all 25 minutes, no problem. Her last 4 fights have gone 25 minutes. Valerie Letourneau, Claudia Gadelha, Karolina Kovacevic, and now Jessica Andrade. That's a lot of octagon mileage, I must say. And one reason I thought Andrade could land a lucky punch, I suppose she did have a puncher's chance and win this fight. But she didn't. And that is because Jędrzejczyk employed excellent defense. She's so crafty with her movement. Not just because Conor McGregor tweeted her a shout out after this, but I've always considered Joanna Jędrzejczyk the Conor McGregor of the women's MMA. Now, it's probably because they're both European. They're both fantastic fighters. Jędrzejczyk is still undefeated. But back to the argument. Joanna Jędrzejczyk is the best women's MMA fighter of all time. Better than Rousey. Better than Cyborg, I would say, because of the level of competition she has taken on. If Chris Cyborg comes in and she ends up fighting Kat Zingano, what I've heard rumors of in July, okay. And if she ends up defeating her, which I would assume she would, that's a good win. Good feather in the cap. Then you need to go beat Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamé. The Holly Holm-Chris Cyborg fight would be a lot like the Ronda Rousey-Holly Holm fight. And Holly Holm, if she keeps Cyborg attacking and just counterpunches her, it'll be interesting to see if Cyborg can get past those counterstrikes, end up getting a takedown. Or, excuse me, I guess she wouldn't go for a takedown because why would she? Her TKO victories are infamous and notorious on stand-up. But back to it, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I would assume she's going to get the winner of Gadelha Kovacevic. It's going to be an interesting fight. The two women that have taken her more to the brink. Kovacevic beat her the last two rounds at UFC 205 in New York City, Madison Square Garden. That was a big stage. And Claudia Gadelha ended up losing the last three rounds to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. The one thing about Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I shouldn't make this comparison, but it's a lot like Floyd Mayweather. She can be knocked out at any time, and she'll most likely win by decision. Although, if she puts enough peppering shots together, she can KO someone. She's done it in the past. She can do it again. To the main event, Stipe Miocic Jr. Dos Santos. This was a rematch of a long time ago, UFC Fight Night on Fox. One that I thought Stipe Miocic did win. Now, I can say that hindsight in 2020. Hindsight is 2020 after all. But Junior Dos Santos, I thought Miocic did enough damage a long time ago on their first meeting. And this time he did enough damage. He did as much damage as possible. Junior Dos Santos kept on coming against the back of the cage. And with that, he's not an effective fighter. He gets blocked off easily, gets walked down easily, and that was a result. Stipe Miocic, TKO, he has been outstanding. I don't think anyone expected this kind of championship run by Stipe Miocic. I know with his quick, swift KO of Andrei Arlovsky at the beginning of last year, that, yeah, the signs were there. The signs were there for him to have this great of run. But to beat Fabricio Werdum in Werdum's backyard of Brazil, and then beat Alistair Overeem in his backyard, where I'm sure there was a bunch of distractions. It's always very odd, I would say, for a fighter to be sleeping in his or her own bed before a fight. And then beating Junior Dos Santos, one of the best heavyweights of all time. A former champion, no less. The only person left to defeat is Cain Velasquez, and the division could be technically swept over by Miocic. Unless Francis Ngannou or Derek Lewis make a run, that would be an interesting fourth title defense with either of those fighters. The Stipe Miocic's ceiling, very high. One more title defense, and he breaks the record for title defenses by a heavyweight. The heavyweight division, whether it's boxing or MMA, so unpredictable. Heavy hands, big blows. But Miocic has something going. He has a little Cleveland fire in him. Now, for those who are superstitious, if the Cleveland Cavaliers lose, does Miocic lose his next fight? Maybe. I doubt it. Unless it's against Cain Velasquez. If it's against anybody else, Miocic has to be the favorite. Cain Velasquez would be a very fun fight. Velasquez, his pedigree says it all. Arizona State wrestler, 2-time world champion, UFC. He was supposed to have a title fight with, if you remember correctly, with Fabricio Werdum at the beginning of last year. Fell through, both got hurt. Then that led to Stipe Miocic versus Fabricio Werdum. Then Velasquez cannot stay healthy, but if he does, he's a fabulous fighter. Just look at his resume. He has fantastic wins. He's only lost twice in his professional career, Fabricio Werdum and Junior Dos Santos. He can do it all. He's the cardio kid. We'll have to see. It'll be fun to see how these storylines play out. MMA is the storyline capital of the athletic world, and one reason why I enjoy watching MMA, seeing how the storylines and the storybook tales of these outstanding athletes end. Will Conor McGregor get the fight with Floyd Mayweather? That's a conversation for another day. I hope so. We need Conor McGregor back at lightweight, featherweight, or he's going to end up vacating both belts, just like he did at Cage Warriors. So, a little MMA talk. We talked to John Walker III. You can see this on Archived. I will be putting up Watching with Westerner on iTunes. I hope you can check it out there. It'll just be the podcast version. I thought today was a great show. Great way to get back in the flow of things. This will be a great summer. A lot to talk about. We're going to talk about a range of topics. A lot more fun segments I'm looking forward to. Going to be talking basketball, football, possibly. Maybe. Baseball, college basketball, of course. Like I said, maybe we'll throw in some movies in there. Movies, music, and, hey, amusement parks are always fun. Orlando, entertainment capital of the world. I'll be going there soon. Maybe do something like we did in the past. watching with Westerner live from City Walk or Downtown Disney Springs now. But that's it for today's show. Watching with Westerner Summer Series Episode 1 in the books. Thank you so much for tuning in. I very much appreciate it. God bless, my friends.